As we all agree, we are here to learn, and we certainly learned a lot at this session so far. And we'll continue with our last presenter. Russell Miller is a collector of early classical instrumental recordings and an accumulator of just about everything else. Oh, I don't know. That sounds a lot like me. That's scary. He lives in New Hampshire, which isn't scary. He became a record nut at a very early age. That is scary. And as the saying goes, it's too late to stop now. I'm scared. By trade, he's an information technologist, technical writer, and whatever else someone might on occasion pay him to do. And his presentation is The Life and Legacy of Oscar Levant.
I think of Oscar Levant as a classical pianist, first and foremost. If people know him today, they've probably seen him in the movies playing a character based largely on the man himself, the piano-playing, chain-smoking, wisecracking sidekick. And he was certainly all of that, but he was a good deal besides. Let's look very briefly at his life, and then explore in the time that we have some of his work that's still around for us to enjoy today. Oscar Levant was born in Pittsburgh on December 27, 1906. This is how his neighborhood looked when he was a child. In fact, his father's jewelry shop, and the Levant family lived above the shop. The shop was across the street from Neiman's department store here on Fifth Avenue. Levant's mother was a music lover. Her favorite was Tchaikovsky. And at around this time, when Levant was very young, his uncle, Oscar Radin, was starting his career as a conductor and musical director on Broadway. Levant studied the piano, first with his brother Benjamin, and then with local teachers in Pittsburgh. He was a normal kid who loved baseball and hated to practice the piano, but he did stick with music. At the age of 15, Oscar Levant's father died, and he decided to try his luck in New York City. In New York, he studied the piano with Sigismund Stoyevsky, who had been a pupil of the celebrated Ignacyan Paderewski. Levant had an opportunity to play for Paderewski, who told Stoyevsky that he was impressed by Levant's technique, but that he didn't have the soul of a concert pianist. Paderewski's judgment was a blow to Levant, but he did have other interests. As he had done in Pittsburgh, he had been taking jobs playing in hotels and roadhouses. For the rest of his life, Levant would keep one foot in the world of classical music and the other in the popular music of the day. In 1925, Levant took a job as pianist with Ben Burney's dance orchestra. It was at this time that he made his first records with Ben Burney for Brunswick and Vocalion. The next year, Levant went on tour in England as accompanist for Rudy Weedoft, a saxophone virtuoso who played mostly what we might call light classical music. While there, Weedoft and Levant made records for Columbia, and this was the first time that Oscar Levant got his name on the label. Back in New York, it was around this time that Levant first got to know George Gershwin, who would become a very important character in his life. In 1927, Levant became the first pianist, other than the composer, to record Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. This was for Brunswick. Also in 1927, Levant took a role in a Broadway play, Burlesque. 2 years later, Burlesque was adapted as a movie, The Dance of Life, and Levant also appeared in the movie. Levant was very busy in the 1930s. He established a reputation as a pianist, particularly for playing Gershwin's music, and he became a close friend of the Gershwins. He went to Hollywood and worked in the movies as performer and composer. An interesting example of his work, we see here Charlie Chan at the opera, for which Levant composed an operatic score to be sung by the characters in the film. Levant also wrote a number of successful popular songs during this period. He took an interest in composing classical music. He studied composition with Joseph Schillinger and with Arnold Schoenberg. Levant's concert works include a string quartet and a piano concerto, as well as shorter orchestral works, which he would, on occasion, conduct himself. In 1937, after the far too early death of George Gershwin, Levant became active as a concert pianist, and Gershwin's Concerto in F became his signature piece. Levant had a great reputation as a wit, always ready with clever and cutting remarks, and this led him to national fame as a panelist on the radio show Information Please. In the early 1940s, Levant began a series of recordings for Columbia Masterworks that continued until 1958, which was pretty much the end of his career as a pianist. 1940 also saw Levant's first best-selling book, A Smattering of Ignorance. Levant was a highlight of the 1945 film Rhapsody in Blue, a somewhat fictionalized account of Gershwin's life. Through the mid-1950s, there were more concerts and recordings. Radio appearances after his Information Please years included a regular spot on the Kraft Music Hall starring Al Jolson. There were more movies too. Humoresque in 1946. The Barclays of Broadway in 1949. In 1951, An American in Paris, probably the one thing Levant did that he's best known for today. O. Henry's Full House in 1952, in which Levant appears with his favorite comedian, Fred Allen. The Bandwagon in 1953. Just a few weeks before he made The Bandwagon, Levant, who had smoked heavily for years, suffered a heart attack. His medical treatment led to a dependency on prescription drugs, painkillers, and sedatives. Pardon me. His many phobias, anxieties, and neuroses, combined with his drug addiction and general physical deterioration, brought his movie and concert career, for the most part, to an end. He continued to make appearances on television, and in the 60s, he wrote two more best-selling books. Oscar Levant died in 1972 from another heart attack at age 65. This is Levant's life in very brief outline. For those who are interested in more details, the place to start is with this book, A Talent for Genius, by Sam Kashner and Nancy Schoenberger, published in 1994. I had originally planned to include some video, but I decided instead to concentrate on audio recordings documenting Levant's career as a radio and recording artist. Levant's movies have, for the most part, been released on home video, first on tapes, then DVD and Blu-ray. A good deal of movie and TV material is also available online. We'll listen first to Oscar Levant, the radio performer. Dan Golenpohl created Information Please with this idea: instead of interviewing the man in the street and putting him on the spot with questions, why not let the public try to stump the program's own panel of experts? Oscar Levant first guested on the program on July 5th, 1938, and he became a regular panelist not long after. Let's hear a bit of that show hosted by Clifton Fadiman. Track one, please.
Here's another one on a musical subject. From Mr. Harold S. Oikle, 39 Goldthwaite Street, Lynn, Massachusetts. Name a famous piece of symphonic music that was written on 5 of the following 6 subjects. Now we have to get 5 out of the following 6. First subject, a graveyard frolic. Can you think of a famous piece of symphonic music written about a graveyard frolic? We'll get on to jollier subjects later on. Mr. Levan, any ideas on that? That is a tough one.
I'm dead.
Mr. Levan can't see through that one. I can hardly pronounce the name of the man who wrote this thing called Danse Macabre.
Oh.
Saint-Saëns. Saint-Saëns? Something like Saint-Saëns. Two. Oh, we've got one wrong. Who wrote a famous piece of symphonic music on Napoleon?
Beethoven.
Beethoven, what was the name of the piece?
The Eroica Symphony.
That's correct, Mr. Levant. A Day in the Country, Mr. Levant. Got any ideas on that one?
Beethoven.
What's the name of the
Pastoral Symphony? Pastoral Symphony.
That's correct. For a picture gallery. This is still Mr. Levant, doing very nicely.
I was wrong twice in my mind. Wait a minute.
It doesn't count if you're wrong in your mind, as long as you don't say it.
What's that, a day in a picture gallery?
Just a picture gallery. It doesn't say how long.
Day in the country. I like that. A picture gallery.
Want to come back to that?
Yeah, I have it someplace.
Oh, he's got it someplace. A railroad train, Mr. Levant.
Honegger, Pacific, some number. I forgot the number.
Well, you don't have to give us a number. 231.
Thank you.
Adds up to 6. Very easy to remember. A great lover.
Don Juan.
By Richard Strauss, that's correct. And now how about that picture gallery? Come on, let's have that picture gallery, Mr. Levant. Anybody else? Mr. Adams? Mr. Kerr, you mean to say you don't know who wrote...
Mussorgsky.
Right. That's correct.
Pictures in an exhibition.
That's correct. Completely unrehearsed, folks. Completely unrehearsed. You just got by on the skin of your teeth, Mr. Levant. Pretty good, though.
Levant specialized in musical questions on the show, but he could handle other topics too. Here he deals with a non-musical question, along with regular panelists John Kieran and Franklin P. Adams, and once again, host Clifton Fadiman. Track 2, please.
The first question comes from Mr. L.O. Wildsmith of Hartsville, Alabama, and it's about famous quarrels. 4 famous quarrels, and I'm going to ask you to get 3 out of 4 of them. What were these famous quarrels about? The first one was between the mountain and the squirrel. Quarrel between the mountain and the squirrel. Mr. Adams.
The mountain called the squirrel little prig.
What did the squirrel say, Mr. Adams?
I don't
know. You only know the mountain's part of it, eh? Mr. Kieran, do you know the squirrel's answer?
The squirrel said, although I may not be able to carry trees on my back, neither can you crack a nut.
Very good. And what poem is it from? Do you remember? It's a famous poem called The Mountain and the Squirrel by whom?
Emerson.
By Emerson. Thank you very much, Mr. Adams. Now, what is the famous quarrel about that takes place between Mr. W.C. Fields and Mr. Charlie McCarthy? Mr. Levant.
Well, his big red nose.
Whose?
W.C. Fields.
Make yourself clear.
And Mr. McCarthy, he's made of wood, kind of a blockhead.
Right. We want to get those straight, otherwise we may be in for libel.
Yes, why is his nose
Fields
so
has
red?
The nose. I beg pardon, Mr.
What makes his nose so red?
I don't know.
A touch of sun.
Might bring it up next week. That's 2 right out of 2. What was the famous quarrel about that took place between Tweedledum and Tweedledee? Tweedledum and Tweedledee. It's hard to just think it out. You really have to know it. I'm sorry. I think you might have gotten that one. Do you remember the song from Alice Through the Looking Glass? Tweedledum and Tweedledee agreed to have a battle. For Tweedledum said Tweedledee had spoiled his nice new rattle. Remember that next time, boys. That's 1 wrong. Now, you have to get the next one right to win out on this question. What was the famous quarrel about that took place between the big Indians and the little Indians? Indians, not Indians. E-N-D-I-A-N-S. The big Indians and the little Indians.
Wasn't that in Gulliver's Travels?
It was indeed, Mr. Levant. Do you want to go a little further? You're all right.
Something about...
You're on the right track.
I'm on the right track.
Yes.
Give me that again. I'll have time.
No. Can't give you very much time, but Gulliver's Travels is right. I'll give you the author of Gulliver's Travels.
How about, yeah? Swift?
Good.
An egg.
An egg. Ah, oh, you've got something there. Go ahead with it.
That's enough for me. That's as much as...
Well, I hate to press you. I hate to press you, Mr. Levant. It is true. The quarrel was between the big Indians who believed that you ought to break an egg at the big end and the little Indians who believed that you ought to break an egg at the little end. And they went to war as a result of this quarrel. It is in Gulliver's Travels, and it's about an egg, and I think I ought to count you right on that. Do you mind, Mr. Levant, if I count you right on that?
I mind.
That's all right. Well, 3 out of 4.
It's interesting to note that there's an unusual reason why we have these recordings of information, please. The radio networks at this time had a policy that what went out over the network must be live. Playing recordings was prohibited. Information, please, originated in New York and was broadcast at 8:30 p.m. That would have been too early to carry the show live on the West Coast. For a drama or comedy show, the normal procedure would be to perform the show twice, once for the East and later for the West. But the whole concept of information, please, depended on the panelists not knowing the questions in advance. So NBC made an exception to its policy for information, please. The show was recorded on lacquered discs, and the recordings were played back for the West Coast. In later years, the show moved to a later time slot and it was carried live all over the country. Very few programs survive from those later years. Levant guested on many radio programs, but apart from information, please, his other major radio credit was on the Kraft Music Hall with Al Jolson from 1947 to 1949. Levant admired Jolson and was grateful for the opportunity to work with him, as his uncle, Oscar Radin, and his brother, Harry Levant, had both conducted for Jolson shows on Broadway. And I'm going to skip the excerpt that I was going to play, I think in the interests of time, because we're going to have a little too much to get to. But it was a show where Oscar Levant participated in a certain amount of dialogue with Jolson, including some very corny jokes. He performed usually classical music, occasionally popular songs, occasionally accompanying Jolson, and also often performing in the skit with a guest star on the show. A good deal of Levant's radio work is available on the internet and from the folks who sell old-time radio shows. Radio Archives offers 2 Information Please sets, as well as a big Al Jolson set that contains a number of Kraft Music Hall shows. For more information specifically on Information Please, you'll want this book by Martin Grams. Speaking of books, it shouldn't be too difficult to find copies of Levant's own books. They're collections of observations, stories, and witty remarks. This is the first, A Smattering of Ignorance, which was written in close collaboration with the music critic Irving Culloden. The Memoirs of an Amnesiac followed in 1965. The Unimportance of Being Oscar is the last, from 1968. These last two were written mostly because Levant had stopped performing and he needed the money. Levant is very frank when he talks about his psychological quirks and his experiences with mental illness and drug addiction at a time when celebrities, as a rule, did not talk about such topics. All of Levant's books were successful and they're still very entertaining. We'll mention very briefly a few of Levant's better known songs by showing off a few record labels found here and there on the internet, among the songs written by Oscar Levant. One of his most successful numbers, Lady Play Your Mandolin, which Warner Brothers used as the subject of the very first Merry Melodies cartoon in 1931. Keep Sweeping the Cobwebs Off the Moon, If you want the rainbow, you must have the rain. Here's a song that's remembered more for its title than anything else, and for the fact that Bing Crosby recorded it. And finally, Blame It on My Youth, the one Levant song that is now considered a jazz standard, performed and recorded by the pop singers who do the standards and known by jazz musicians everywhere. I'll add a personal plug for Nat King Cole's After Midnight. What a great album that is. The biography of Levant that I mentioned earlier has a good list of early recordings of Levant's songs and a discography of his recordings as a pianist compiled by a real expert on Levant, Michael Feinstein. A few words about Oscar Levant's recording career for Columbia Masterworks. The big works he recorded were concertos for piano and orchestra, The War Horses by Tchaikovsky and Grieg. Another big romantic work, but one less frequently heard, the Fourth Concerto by Anton Rubinstein. And he also did a modern concerto, the one by Aram Khachaturian. Of course, there was Gershwin, the Rhapsody in Blue, the Concerto in F, the Second Rhapsody, and I Got Rhythm Variations. The solo records were made up of shorter works, principally, particularly the music of Chopin, Liszt, and Debussy, and some 20th century works that would be accessible to Levant's audiences. Reflecting the music he performed and the tastes of the public, he didn't record sonatas and other big solo works, didn't make records of chamber music. Sad to say, very few of Levant's recordings have been reissued from original sources in modern media. Sony has made available consistently the recordings of Gershwin and not much else besides. Even when he made his last recordings in 1958, he could still play wonderfully. From his album, Some Pleasant Moments in the 20th Century, this is Lotus Land, an early 20th century piece by the English composer Cyril Scott. Track 4, please.
Thank you.
One last thing about Levant and Columbia Masterworks. As it happens, when Oscar Levant died, his funeral was private, and only family members attended. The one exception was Goddard Lieberson from Columbia. I'll close with just mentioning a few interesting items that are available on the internet. When Levant was the pianist for Ben Burney, he made an early sound film, Ben Burney and All the Lads, dated to late 1924 or early 1925, based on the songs that were recorded. Here at redhotjazz.com, there's a good deal of explanation and links to the video. There are also videos, the same videos available in different versions on YouTube. YouTube and a search for Oscar Levant on YouTube will bring up some of these items. One of the 18 RKO shorts of information, please, very rare, not in good quality on YouTube, but maybe of interest. Very brief clips from Levant's appearances with Jack Parr. This was one of the things that, you know, that really was, these were his only public appearances pretty much at the time that he did them. Another show, The Celebrity Game, hosted by Carl Reiner. And there's a show featuring Levant along with a number of other interesting celebrities. An Oscar Levant show, an example of some of the local and syndicated television programming that he did, a very rare example, featuring, there's Oscar and Mrs. Levant, and the program features Fred Astaire. Again, very poor video quality, but certainly a rare item of great interest. Levant's appearance on What's My Line, and Levant on the Jack Benny show. Jack Benny's suffering a good deal of stress, and Levant convinces him to see his doctor, which I suppose in real life might not have been a good idea, but it works well enough for the TV show. So I thank you very much for listening, and I encourage you to go out, and if you don't know him and his work, to get familiar with Oscar Levant. Thank you very much.
I want to thank everybody for lasting through this. I think it came out quite well, and we had four wonderful presentations, and it's something for us to go back to our rooms and dream about for a while. Thank you. Good night.